Hey there, welcome to SaaS Inbound Podcast. I'm your host and Nadina, Head of Growth at SaaS Group, serial acquirer buying wonderful SaaS businesses to take them to the next level. And here I chat with inspiring founders and experts to get an inside scoop on how they made their business success. So today with me is Patty, CEO at DigitalOcean, an infrastructure as a service provider that you all have probably heard about anyway. So welcome and happy to see you here.
Thank you, Anna. Thank you for having me here. And it's wonderful to meet all of your listeners and the SaaS group companies, as well as your broader audience.
Cool. Awesome. Well, you know, before we get into anything DigitalOcean, I would like to learn more about you because, well, we got introduced by your former colleague, my current colleague. And I know a little bit, but it's a fascinating story and I would love to hear it from you too.
Okay, great. Thank you, Anna. So yeah, the common colleague we have is Zoli, and Zoli and I worked together at LogMeIn, which is the place I was at previously. But if you rewind all the way back, I'm an electrical engineer by training. I really started my career in earnest working at Microsoft in the mid to late 90s. I was there for 10 years, pretty much rotated in every Microsoft team that you can imagine, starting with operating systems and then developer tools and then finally in Office, but all the time pretty much working on developer products, developer platforms. So that was my initiation to the world of software development and specifically addressing the needs of developers. And then I spent a couple of years at Oracle building embedded databases, and then I had a startup for about 5 years. This was the early days of cloud, so we built a platform for monitoring and managing deployments on the cloud and make sure that they're working seamlessly between on-premise and the cloud and things like that. And then I spent almost 10 years on and off at a company called LogMeIn. When I joined, they were already IPO'd about $100 million, and we scaled the company to about $1.4 billion. With a lot of acquisitions, mergers, demergers, and spin-offs, and the whole nine yards. So that's where I met Zoli. And it was a phenomenal ride for many of us. And then last year, almost 14 months back, I joined DigitalOcean as its CEO. And here I am. That's my background.
All right. Let's see where it scales now. Really exciting. So what's your kind of main goal when you joined? What's the goal for you for DigitalOcean?
Yeah, great question. So DigitalOcean, for those of you who might not be very familiar with the company, we are an 800 million plus public cloud. So I'm sure everyone has heard of other public clouds, the hyperscalers like AWS, Google Cloud, Azure, Oracle Cloud. We are the third largest public cloud by number of customers, and we are the fifth largest public cloud in terms of revenue. So we have a pretty good scale, and we went public exactly 4 years ago. And my mandate was to scale the company from the almost $1 billion scale today to and keep addressing the needs of our customers and bring more customers to the DigitalOcean family. The one interesting thing is DigitalOcean has a phenomenal mind share with developers. In fact, over the last 12 months, we had 3 million active professional developers active on DigitalOcean, 3 million. And there are only like 26, 27 million professional developers in the world. So we have more than 12% participation from professional developers across the world. So that's a very, very strong position to be in. So we are a cloud that many people learn to program in. We are the almost, in many cases, we are the first place where professional developers learn a new technology and deploy something just to get their hands dirty with software development. So we enjoy that trust and mind share with professional developers. So that's a very unique position to be in. And as the company evolves, we are solving different types of problems for a slightly different set of customers. And I'll be happy to get into all of that. But that was my mandate when I joined the company.
That's a very different one to 10 kind of journey from most founders or CEOs. So when you started talking about all the cloud providers, it reminded me of this topic last year that's got started by the guys from 37 Signals, Basecamp, about, you know, the way they are building Once.com, and also about the fact that they are leaving the cloud And, you know, because the cost of the cloud is just humongous for them and for a lot of companies, they think they're overpaying quite a bit. And the advantages are certainly there. But if you basically tackle the hardware, you won't need to be in the cloud anymore. So has this movement, let's say, reached you guys in a way? And what did you think about it?
No, it's a great question. That's a great question. So our core value proposition addresses this exact concern, Anna. So I think there are two extreme sets of customers that even if they're fed up with the cloud in terms of the expenses, the hidden expenses, the unpredictable expenses, can repatriate from cloud to on-premise, right? Either you have to be a super strong technical founder, like the 37 Signals, or you have to be like a massive enterprise customer, like a Procter & Gamble or JP Morgan, where you have tens of thousands of developers that can afford to take something from the cloud and run it yourself. But 99% of the world is somewhere in between, and they cannot do it. And that is our value proposition. We pitch three differentiators. We are simple, we are scalable, yet very approachable. Let me break that down for you. So simple is a really, really hard thing to do, especially in complex technologies like cloud, when we have ourselves like 50 different services we offer, all the way from infrastructure as a service, which has compute, storage, bandwidth, networking, and things like that. And then we have platform services like serverless, Kubernetes, managed databases, managed web hosting, and things like that. So it just gets very, very complex. So making it simple is a hard problem. It is not easily copyable. And we deliver on that promise, or that's what has built DigitalOcean to the size it is today. And we do that with a couple of things in mind. One, we package things in a way that makes it super, super easy for companies. So for example, our Droplets, which is our smallest unit of deployment, comes with CPU, which is compute. It also comes with a certain amount of storage and bandwidth all packaged together in one bundle called the Droplet. So it just takes a lot of the decision-making out of the developers and makes them productive very, very quickly. And we are also scalable. We have 17 global data centers, and we have footprint all over the world. We have customers in 190 countries. So we are not a very small Mickey Mouse cloud. We are a global public cloud. And number three is we are super, super approachable in the sense that we take a lot of pride in taking the guesswork out of pricing. Not only do we typically save 30, 40, 50% off of your cloud bill, we do that in a way that is super transparent. And it makes your cloud operations and expenses very transparent and predictable month over month over month. So you don't have to hire a consultant to go through the bill, which many people do. There are many companies and consultants who actually read cloud bills and give you a breakdown of exactly where you're spending your money on the cloud. So you don't have to do that with somebody like DigitalOcean. And the other thing is, most large clouds will try to lock you in. These are all walled gardens. Once you get into one of these clouds, it's really impossible to get out. And we, on the other hand, we are a very big promoter of open source. So whether it is Kubernetes or open source databases, so we have Postgres, MySQL, and things like that, we work with the open source community. We are, in fact, one of the largest promoter of open source communities in the world. So we are very active, and we promote bidirectional movement into our cloud, outside of our cloud. And recently we even announced virtual private networking between our cloud and other third-party clouds. So we are doing our best to not make ourselves a walled garden. And as I like to say, we are large enough to scale with our customers, but we are small enough to care about them. So that's what we see. I think this is a great opportunity. The cloud complexity and expenses have gotten out of control, and not everyone can afford to do everything by themselves. But I see it as an opportunity for someone like DigitalOcean.
Okay. All right. So basically what we're saying is there will always be, you know, complex enough problems and for you guys to kind of take away, and there will be smart enough people to not need that. So basically, all right, so you're not competing, that in a nutshell. I want to obviously jump on another topic right away, because it's, well, everyone does, right? And I was listening to your episode, one of the latest ones, and I really liked how you put it, the fact that AI is really a playground for rich and funded. And well, okay, then DigitalOcean is rich and funded. Let's see how you guys are playing with it, and how you bring that innovation, and if it becomes more like it moves towards your value, core value proposition, or it's just kind of an added feature, something that now people just kind of expect to have at all times.
Yeah, that's a great topic, very topical. A lot of companies are grappling with this. And I typically say that AI, unfortunately, today is only for the rich and famous or rich and funded. The reason is, when I say cloud, it has become super complicated and super expensive and inaccessible for most people. AI is absolutely more complex and more expensive and pretty much out of reach for most companies because it's so expensive to do anything at scale in production. So how do we democratize that? How do we take a leaf out of our playbook in the cloud and bring it to AI? So most companies are, so there's so much headlines in LLMs or training new large language models. Like every day, there's a version of 3.4 of this and a 400 billion parameter model of that. So all of that is fantastic, but that's half a dozen companies that are doing it, right? I mean, think about it, right? You take a step back and think about who's actually training these models. It's maybe 10 companies at max, right? So big picture wise, LLMs are incredibly important and they are the output of training. So you train, you have large data sets and you train and you create LLMs. And how many LLMs are going to be there in 3 or 4 years? I would say it is probably going to be, generously speaking, in the dozens, because you have some base models and then you have different vertical variants or domain specific variants, which you don't need to train the whole thing. You can do fine tuning. You can take a base model, distill it and create your own versions. But even that is going to be in the dozens. But if you look at what the rest of the world needs is inferencing, because inferencing is where you use one of the LLMs or many of the LLMs together, but you're actually consuming AI to do some work that was not previously possible. And I think when you enter that paradigm, it opens up the market by many orders of magnitude. So for every company that is doing training, there'll be 100, 1,000x the number of companies doing inferencing. And the market is going to be at least 10, if not 100x of the training market for inferencing. And inferencing is where companies are going to use AI and they're going to get the business benefits of AI. So what is really inferencing? Inferencing starts with the GPU and you need some services around it. But also, if you think about how are you going to use that AI knowledge inside your application, you need your application, you need data pipes, you need pre-processing, post-processing, you need to run your application somewhere, you need to distribute the load worldwide. So all of those things also need a general purpose cloud. So that's the paradigm we are moving towards, is an inferencing cloud that has both the LLM running as a service, but you also have other Gen AI platforms. And some people are starting to call it an agentic cloud. An agentic cloud has Gen AI platforms like the hosted LLMs and a bunch of other services, and also an infrastructure for inferencing cloud. So when you look at that, how do we democratize that? So there are two or three different ways by which we're doing it. One, we have an inferencing cloud, which provides GPUs, whether it is NVIDIA or AMD. We have GPUs available for processing these LLMs or running these LLMs or inferencing these LLMs. And on top of it, we have a platform layer, a Gen AI platform layer, which is essentially, if all you need is an LLM running as a service, we have a serverless infrastructure, which has most of these LLMs running, especially the open source LLMs, running as an API endpoint. So if you are a SaaS company and you are building a productivity app or a travel booking app, you're not looking to build an LLM or run an LLM. So you know that you want these two or three LLMs, and you just need an API endpoint to consume it in a serverless fashion. You don't want the headache of managing the whole infrastructure. And you want to pay as you go using a token-based system. Like, you consume tokens and you pay for the tokens you're consuming, whether it is injecting tokens or extracting tokens. It doesn't matter. So that is what I mean by democratizing, where you are making it affordable for companies to pay as you go, use the infrastructure just using API, so you don't have to manage the lifecycle of a GPU and things like that. And also out-of-the-box agents. So we talk about at DigitalOcean, we have a three-layer strategy: infrastructure, platform, and applications. And infrastructure is the inference cloud. You need all the GPU networking and things like that. Platform is hosted LLMs and associated services. And A stands for agents, which are the new class of applications. So out of the box, you get AI-enabled workflows. And companies, especially in like SaaS group, can start using our platform and infrastructure to create their own versions of agents that can run on the cloud. So that's very empowering, because you don't need to buy GPUs or build an infrastructure and things like that. You can just program using APIs and pay as you go with an inferencing model like what we have at DigitalOcean.
All right. Okay. Well, thanks for walking me through this. But another question on that is, you know, we frequently talk about AI. I talk about AI with founders here on the podcast, to talk with my colleagues. And it's interesting, one of the guests here said that if you talk to 5 different people about AI, you will get 6 different opinions what it is. And I kind of agree with that, because I was just working with my colleague, and for him, AI is, you know, this thing that helps content creation. And for another one, it's a co-pilot that helps with development. What is AI in our case? Like, for DigitalOcean, when we're talking AI, what are we talking about?
Yeah, I think I was just explaining the concept of, so for DigitalOcean, we are an AI provider. We provide infrastructure for companies to use AI. So for us, it is, you have infrastructure, you have platform, and you have agents, IPA stack. And for most companies, as I said, are going to be users of AI. They will build some AI-based agents or agentic software, but they're going to be users of LLMs. So for most companies, what they need is not a very complicated infrastructure. What they need is a way by which they can consume AI in a very easy, predictable, and accessible way to start ingesting AI into their applications. So I feel it will go in two different waves. The first wave, and we have seen this in internet and mobile wave and social wave and things like that, the first wave is going to be, everyone will take their existing applications and just add AI features to it. That'll be the first wave, right? And then in a couple of years, there will be startups that will take, project management. Let's take project management as a horizontal category. So all the project management companies will start putting AI features in their product. And then 2 or 3 years later, someone will come with AI native project management software, which will look totally different from today's project management applications in terms of data entry, reporting, visibility, insights, management. All of that will be completely AI native. And once those things start getting traction, new winners will be born in these categories. And existing companies will have an existential question on, Should I disrupt myself and reinvent myself as an AI native application, or how do I defend my moat? And most companies will reinvent themselves as an AI native provider, and that will be phase two. So I really think that's how this is going to evolve over the next 5 years.
All right. So you think that tech moat is still possible in our day and age?
Absolutely.
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. Academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
Okay. All right. And how do you bring that innovation into the product? Like, is it just, basically, is it something that you're talking with your customers potentially about, but then maybe you could walk me through the process, because AI, I know it's coming out of like every single outlet, but it's such a new thing and customers may not even know what they want with it. Or is it just your roadmap? I don't know, your developers, how does it work?
Yeah, so when we talk to our customers, you're absolutely right. Many customers struggle with, where do I even get started? So from my perspective, there are a couple of ways to look at it. First is look at workflows that are currently done by humans. Like if you look at the first wave of digitalization was you looked at manual processes that are repetitive that you can digitize. So that was SaaS 1.0, even before that, the ERP systems, CRM systems, they automated routine, repetitive human workflows into standardized processes. And then SaaS just put them on the cloud and put a subscription model on top of it. But AI will go one step further, where you can not only super automate repetitive human tasks, it can also take human tasks that are not repetitive, human tasks that need judgment, human tasks that needs reasoning, and human tasks that need coordination across different humans can be automated now with Gen AI. That is the beauty of the world that we are entering, where we can literally automate the until now unautomatable. Because you needed judgment, you needed reasoning, you needed coordination between different humans. You can now think of ways by which you can automate those things. That just opens up infinite possibilities, right? So think about the TAM of something like this. It is literally human services becomes the TAM, right? Every profession can be automated using Gen AI. So this is not to say that all of us will be out of jobs, but our jobs are going to be totally reinvented because AI can do a lot of the work that we are doing today, enabling us to do more creative things and more and generate more value for the companies we are working for. So I feel, in a nutshell, what I would advise companies to do is look at what problem are we solving for our customers and work backwards to see how we can enable technologies to go from being an enabler of those workflows driven by humans to the main actor of those workflows with humans in the loop just for advanced reasoning and support system. So essentially it becomes from human 80% with 20% automation to AI agents 80% with 20% human intervention in the loop.
Okay, I see. I was kind of also talking about, the way you just implement it, because, for example, obviously at SaaS Group we are trying to find ways where to implement AI where it makes sense, where it brings value, where we can in a way play with it, but explore some different revenue streams. And we had a retreat just recently in Morocco, and we had this full day of hackathon where different teams or just individual developers, they would just create something simple, just an idea, something that we could already kind of try. And a few of those ideas are now being implemented in either workflows or product or anything and any of the layers of our work at the group. And Zoli, our mutual friend, actually shared that in LogMe, and you also had this big culture of hackathons, and that's in a way also was the way to implement and innovate and see what's there using disruptors in the company. Is this happening also in DigitalOcean? Are you planning to, yeah, how do you kind of enable the teams to also tackle this?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we of course have hackathons internally to unlock innovation and give the teams, most importantly, enable the teams to focus on a single problem for a few days so that they can hyper focus on driving innovation in a very short period of time. Actually, we are a company that, as I was saying, we are very active in the open source world. So our engineers, both junior engineers as well as surely senior and principal engineers, are big contributors to open source, all the way from Linux stacks to hypervisors and whatnot. And we routinely contribute and also speak in various open source conferences and also participate in a lot of open source hackathons. In fact, the world's largest open source hackathon was founded and is still hosted by DigitalOcean called Hacktoberfest. And last year we had over 65,000 active developers in that. It's a massive global phenomenon, and it is really the largest open source community event worldwide. And it has grown from just being mostly DigitalOcean and a couple of other companies to like a global phenomenon over the last several years. And it happens in October, so we are very proud founder sponsors and main type of organizer for that event. And we also do many other events across the world over the rest of the year. So yes, that culture is very alive, both in DigitalOcean as well as in the communities we serve.
SaaS Group is partnering with SaaSTalk USA, taking place May 13th to 14th in Austin, Texas. This is where heads-down SaaS founders and their teams move their business forward. As a partner, we have 30% discount available to share with our network. Use code SaaSGroup30 in all capital letters and see you there.
All right, that's awesome. Anything, maybe you can give an example of what is being implemented now that came from one of those events?
Yeah, so the internal events create a lot of different things. So for example, we are now building, we have it in public beta, we have a AI agent, which is, we call it the AI SRE, which stands for Site Reliability Engineering. So we have taken the human workflow of having to go through all the logs from storage logs to database logs, application logs, network logs, cloud logs, all of those things, and find out the root cause of an incident before an incident happens, right? Both reactively as well as proactively. So agents can do this kind of work. It's hugely technical and very time consuming. So we this started as an idea, we started working on it, and now we are in public beta of this, and our customers absolutely love it. And we're just taking feedback, making the product even better, and we will ship sometime in the next few weeks. So that's one example. From an open source perspective, there's many other, many things that came out of Hacktoberfest, not just specific to DigitalOcean, but just making open source community better. So there are a lot of developers that wait for Hacktoberfest because something has been bothering them. They just don't have time to actually go and fix that for the common good of the larger community. And they use Hacktoberfest as a way by which they can fix that bug that has been bothering them in an open source database connector or the Linux kernel or something like that. So we have literally hundreds of examples of those things happening every Hacktoberfest.
Okay, sounds perfect. All right, I have one more question about AI, and I'm sorry this is turning into this whole AI discussion, but I'm just, yeah, I had a few talks with Zoli as well, and I just couldn't let it go. But yeah, also just researching a little bit and crawling through your LinkedIn, I also noticed that a month ago you announced that DeepSeek model was available on your GenAI platform. And I was a little bit surprised just because, you know, I'm not very big on the news, but that one I heard, and, you know, all the US companies going completely crazy. And, you know, there are so many fears and suspicions and what is going on. And you guys just went with it. How did you make that decision? And yeah, what was the reason for it?
Yeah, so it's a good question. So we actually announced support for DeepSeek in like less than 48 hours after it came out. So for us, it was a pretty straightforward decision. We always make business decisions based on what our customers are asking for. And going all the way back to the previous topic of democratizing AI for our customers, cost of the LLMs and running them and offering them to our customers is making it prohibitive for most companies to adopt AI. And with DeepSeek, and also it's not just specific to DeepSeek, any world-class open source model just radically reduces that total cost of ownership for companies to run these things, right? So for us, it was a great opportunity that there is a new open source model. We are hosting it. So the data resides with us for our customers. It's not going into a big scary place or anything like that. We are hosting it. So we host the LLM, the data resides with us, the data belongs to our customers. We're very clear about that. So it became a very simple decision for us to support it. And so has all of the large cloud providers. They are all supporting open source DeepSeek. So I feel the more open source innovation we can get in the world of LLMs, the faster the adoption is going to be and lower the total cost of ownership is going to be to build and deploy agentic applications that take advantage of this phenomenon called LLMs. So I think that for the GenAI wave to flourish, we need to keep driving the costs down. And open source is a great place to get started with.
Do you see any risk at all with AI?
Yeah, of course there are risks in multiple dimensions, but I think we need to let the innovation run first before getting super paranoid about clamping down at the edges. I mean, of course there are ethical risks, there are morality risks, there is privacy risks, there are biases. There's just so many different dimensions of risks when it comes to any new technology. It's not very different from when internet came out or mobile phones came out. There are social implications. There are economic implications. There are strategic national importance implications of all of these things. So, I mean, of course, these things have to be studied. These things have to be analyzed. These things have to be regulated at some point. But I feel we need to collectively as an industry, we need to get the sequencing right. We have to make sure that we don't constrain the innovation before we know what the full potential is, while being super aware of all of these risks that I just talked about. But I think it is really important to get the order of operations right.
Yeah, absolutely. And is there anything else everyone talks AI. Is there anything else in SaaS or in tech that you're as excited about or, you know, even close?
Yeah, I think AI has really sucked the air out of the room these days. But in terms of core cloud, at DigitalOcean, we are super excited. Our growth is reaccelerating in core cloud. And the main reason for that is a lot of our customers and prospects that are coming to us are deeply dissatisfied with the status quo of the cloud. So our focus target customer base is digital native enterprises. And for digital native companies, it's really hard to swallow the complexity and the cost profile of public clouds, because public clouds, especially the hyperscalers, are building for the large enterprise customer. And that just makes it super complex. You don't need most of those capabilities, and it just makes it super, super hard. And they all try to put you into their walled gardens. So we feel we have a great opportunity, and I'm super excited by the feedback we are getting from our customers. They love what we're doing, and I think AI is the icing on the cake, but the cake is the core cloud for us.
Okay. All right. Moving on to, you know, the kind of the last two questions, unless I come up with something else, just kind of trying to process everything that you've already said. But maybe let's start with the first one that I usually ask. It's, you know, the biggest win and the biggest failure. And it can be, you know, for you as a CEO or for the company so far in this year.
This year, that's a very specific question. I think I would say this year, it's too early, so I'll probably take the creative license to say last 12 months, right? I think the thing that we all wish we could have done better is when I walked into this role, one of the things I noticed was we were making decisions in a way that felt distant or removed from our customers. And that's the biggest thing that I've been focusing on fixing by talking to more customers, getting more feedback directly from customers. And that's something that is really, really important for any founder or any CEO to keep in mind, that decision making has to be very close to the customers, with the customer in mind. And it comes in different flavors. So first of all, just getting the frontline employees in a company closer to decision making. So how do we get them close to engineering, as an example, to influence the direction of product, influence the decision of the company's strategy? That is really, really important. So I feel we are significantly better today than we were 12 months ago, and I'm very proud of the work that the team has done. And it is already showing up in our financial results. So that's the beauty of a public company. You get a daily report card, you get a quarterly report of how we are doing, and our pretty much every metric that we publish externally is showing a bounce back. So that is good. Obviously, we are doing something right. When you think about what gives me excitement is all the innovation that we are doing, both on core cloud as well as in AI. And I think with AI, this is going to be a generational opportunity, not just for us, but for our customers. And we want to be there with them for their journey. And that is super exciting for me.
Yeah, definitely is. I mean, like I said, the last year, it's been like everyone's talking about it. And some are still kind of stalling and not sure if they should jump on it, but certainly curious. All right. And the last one is usually about a hack, right? And it can be anything, something small that works for you on day to day, or maybe, you know, something really big. I mean, how do you scale a company of that size?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I'll start with one very small hack, which is I'm super specific about the ways in which I'm spending my time. So I'm very particular about identifying my monthly priorities and also the weekly priorities, and making sure that my calendar is reflective of that. And my executive assistant and her team keeps me very focused on that. So that's a big risk running a big company. You get sucked into so many different things that you lose sight of what is important versus what is urgent. So just making sure that I control the time allocation and not let urgent priorities control my time is a really, really important hack and something that I painfully learned over the last several years.
Okay, that's a good one. And I'm really glad that, you know, this became a priority at some point. And it was really great talking to you. And, you know, it's just exciting to kind of see what everyone's doing, but to see what like giants like DigitalOcean are doing is even more exciting, just because the impact is so different. So yeah, thanks for sharing your aspirations.
Anna, thank you for having me on your show. And it was wonderful to talk to you about all these different topics, and appreciate your time as well.
Thank you so much, and take care.
That was yet another awesome conversation on SaaS Unbound. We're always looking for new guests to share their experiences. We mostly talk with bootstrapped SaaS founders, and if you're one, reach out to me directly at anna@saas.group or find me on LinkedIn. If you're not bootstrapped or even not SaaS but have a great story to tell, we want to hear from you too. And obviously, SaaS Unbound wouldn't be possible without the SaaS Group, a founder-friendly private equity company that buys awesome businesses that people love to take them to even greater success. If you're thinking about selling your company or just exploring your options, feel free to visit saas.group, fill in the form, and expect a response in under 24 hours.